Welcome to Coaching Conversations, a weekly discussion of topics related to coaching and sport of volleyball at all levels. I'm your host, John Foreman, author of the CoachingVB.com blog and co-developer of the Volleyball Coaching Wizards Project. Let's dive right in. Welcome to episode 12 of the podcast, and greetings from a very, very snowy Buffalo where I'm located. I'm recording this on December 27th, 2020. And it started snowing somewhere in the evening, going from Christmas Eve to Christmas Day, and more or less didn't stop snowing until late in the day on the 26th of December, so the day after Christmas. And the accumulation was a lot. I can't remember the last time I was in this much snow. It's definitely been a while. So interesting experience. You learn real fast how badly out of shape you are when you're trying to shovel a large amount of snow, which I'm having to deal with. But hey, this is what you get for moving back to the north. My guest on this episode is I'm sure, very well versed in dealing with snow, having coached at Ohio State, the University of Ohio, and Concordia St. Paul, and now lives in Colorado. So he's been around the white stuff. This is an interesting discussion. I use the term grace in the title for it, Coaching with Grace. But be aware that the way Jeff uses it is probably different than you're thinking when you first picture that phrase or hear that phrase. And I'm going to let him explain it rather than try to get into it here in the introduction. But the whole concept of what we're talking about here is kind of how we treat ourselves as coaches. And the way that influences how we work and our interactions with our teams and our sense of reward and satisfaction with our work. So I think it's an interesting talk. And at some point, I'd be interested to have Jeff together with Simon Loftus, who I did a conversation with, one of the first series of coaching conversations with, on the subject of stress in coaching. Because Simon's been doing PhD research on that topic, and kind of in parallel with being the men's national team coach for England. So that could be an interesting conversation between Jeff and Simon. Anyway, we'll get on with the episode. Hope you enjoy. Definitely leave comments, share your thoughts, let us know what you think. Enjoy. I was actually just going through your article again. And it seems like, from what you've written, and the introduction mentions the ABCA stuff you've done, and we can definitely touch on that, especially conversations with other coaches. But it seems kind of the core of the message that you've got in this article kind of revolves around you being let go at Ohio State and your immediate response to it, kind of emotionally. But then really quick on that, like you were saying, on your way to your car while you're in the parking lot, you had a secondary reaction that kind of just flipped things. And that secondary reaction ends up being the basis for the article. So I'd be curious for you to kind of walk through that.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, it's very interesting. Coaching at Concordia University in St. Paul and then Ohio University and then Ohio State. I mean, it's very, very different experiences, a lot of it self-imposed, where, that's why I said, that 2008 season was one of my favorites because there was no pressure. Mm-hmm. There was zero expectations. And I think that's one of the next year we finished like 12th in the country and made the Sweet 16 and all that. And, I think that was, there was a lesson there that I'm reflecting on now, how do you coach from that position, whether you're at, Concordia St. Paul or whether you're at Ohio University or whether you're in the Big Ten. And, so for me, it was really about, we had a ton of injuries in 2018 and really couldn't recover, or 2017. And then, we lost three setters in a row and we had concussions. We had all sorts of things. It was unbelievable. I'd gone 10 years without hardly any injuries. And so, the stress that I was feeling, and part of it was pressure for my job. Part of it's pressure, a lot of it's self-imposed because you want to win and you want to achieve and you want to be successful. And you want to do things right. And, I think all of that, that transformation in the parking lot was, I likened it to, there had been a slow bleed, like it'd been a slow bleeding for, I would say, 3 years. And I wrote that a little bit in the, you know, coaching from a place of fear. I would also describe it, you know, there was a bit of a slow bleed. And then finally, you know, the arm was amputated and I was like, well, it's gone now. And I'm not no longer the coach. And so there was a relief, pressure, not off my shoulders, like off my chest. And I literally felt that. And that's not who I am. I enjoy pressure. I enjoy competition. I didn't really want to get into it, you know, in terms of Ohio State specific. I didn't want to make it about the things that I struggled with. And I think a lot of coaches struggle with, maybe depending on, the relationships and the culture that you're working within. Mm-hmm. But for me, it was more, you know, okay, that's it. Now it's, and there was a relief in that, the finality of that.
Right.
And retrospectively, that, you know, I look at that as there was a grace that was connected. I use the word grace, not as religious. It's funny. I have some friends that are Catholics and they talked about how grace is perceived from a Catholic perspective. Mm-hmm. That's not, for me, it was a letting go, and then reflective on how do we do this, like through COVID, right? How do we, the ABC stuff was a lot about this grace of how do we give ourselves a break, right? As coaches, because we want it, we need to know the answers. We put a lot of pressure on ourselves. Most of it's self-inflicted. We're coaching because we're competitive people. We're driven people. We care. We're passionate. And so at least, you know, speaking from my perspective and frankly, from a lot of my friends that I know are feeling the same way, that while we really don't give ourselves a break, and I think that's a little bit in the DNA of being a coach and being, you know, and being a high achiever in general. I would imagine CEOs of companies would feel the same way. But I can only speak from the coaching perspective. So, you know, what I've been speaking to and what I'm actually, the business that I'm starting up really is about, okay, how do you navigate life? Because COVID has exposed the fact that life is impermanent and we don't have nearly the control that we think of.
Right.
And there's a lesson there from coaching. And the word that kept coming up to me was grace. You know, and for me, it was letting go, being vulnerable, being honest, you know, leaning in on the sharp edges, and telling your story. So I really, when I was asked to write something about, my experience from Lee, that's what came out was, I'm going to share my story a little bit. I didn't want to make it all about me, but I felt the parking lot and that visual I thought was important because it happened. And then moving forward to, wow, how can we learn from this earlier? And COVID, I think, really gives us a great opportunity to do that. Like it's a stressful situation. So how can we use the pandemic in a way that when we come on the other side of it, we'll be better people and more prepared for having gone through it?
Yeah. You kind of touched on it. You know, as coaches, we tend to be control freaks.
Right.
And you can't control COVID. It's completely outside of anything you have any ability to manipulate, you know, one way or the other. You just kind of have to deal with it. And I've actually, personally, I can't speak to other coaches. I know some have been more frustrated than others, for sure. Maybe it's because I'm in a new job and everything is new. So, you know, everything is just like, okay, I got to learn this and I got to figure that out. Maybe I've been able to roll with it a little bit more than if I had kind of been in an established position for a while and where your routines are a little bit more set and, you know, it's August and you start preseason now and you do this and you do that and the other thing and got your travel planning all done. Whereas in my case, it's like, well, okay, I came in at a time where some places are already in lockdown and quarantine or whatever restrictions, and it was just kind of built into the cake at that moment. But I do, I have, and actually I sent this, or said this before, and I emailed it out. I have a lot of respect for the kids in my program on the men's and women's team. They, you know, obviously they wanted to play, they wanted to train, they wanted to do all the things that they would normally be able to do, but weren't able to do, except for that little bit in November when they finally got around to it. And they rode with it. I didn't hear a lot in the way of, you know, I mean, of course, yeah, everybody's going to grumble a little bit here and there. I mean, I wish we could do that, or, you know, but there wasn't a lot of any really kind of that seriously negative sort of response. And I'm curious to, I've heard some coaches talk about that, but I'm curious to how wide that is. Is that generally a fairly universal thing among our student athletes, or, you know, is it a little bit more split up depending on maybe situations or level or whatever?
Yeah, I think, you know, I've been lucky enough to be able to talk through the ABCA, through the sessions I did, which was, you know, the umbrella of storytelling, right? It was storytelling to, you know, relative to leaving your legacy, relative to your core principles, relative to family. And I think the coaches who are willing to have, you know, initiate really hard conversations, like real, but authentic, like, hey, how are you feeling? Like, here's where I am. I'm struggling. You know, this is what I'm thinking, you know, how are you feeling? And then being curious and listening. I think the coaches that are able to do that are going to come out the other side in a much better position. But I just think, you know, every program, every coach, like you described your situation, I think everyone's just wired. We're all wired differently, right? So this could be based off of, you know, things from our upbringing and bringing up all sorts of different things. It could be, you know, where we were the year before. Like, I do think you coming in your situation where you have like five players and one of them's, you know, walking on, the other one's a bowler, you know, I think that does allow you to sort of relax a little bit more maybe than some people as your first year coming in. But who knows? I'm sure there's people in your situation that are like super stressed out because they feel like they got to get going. They're anxious and they're, you know, all of that. So I think it comes down to everyone. COVID exposes everyone and exposes our weakness. And we all have different things we're navigating, right? I mean, some people handle it quote unquote better, but who the hell knows what's happening, right? Really know. Let me get rid of this.
No problem.
Jeez, of course. Great timing. Who really knows like what's going on behind closed doors? And it's really, I think the one thing that is certain is that it's if we go about it in a way that I'm going to be curious, I'm going to be really I just went here this week. Because there's days right now that I'm great, that I couldn't be happier. You know, like, I don't know if you know Jerry Lynch, but Jerry Lynch and I have connected. He does the way of the warrior and the way of the champion. Sure. I mean, him and I were talking. He's like, you know, I'm excited that you got fired.
Like, wait, what?
But I mean, there's some truth in it too, right? I mean, that if I decide to get back into coaching, I'm going to be back because I've chosen to be really mindful and share as much as I can. And I think coaches just are afraid, or maybe we don't have people that we can say real stuff to, like, really. That's why I loved at the end of long recruiting days going and having dinner with people and having a bottle of wine and talking about life.
Yeah.
Frankly, that's what I'm going to miss. One of the things I'm going to miss a lot about is that those connections and being able to sit down and actually and get real and authentic as you have dinner with some good friends. But I think, you know, if we give young people a chance, they're going to be resilient. And I think it's one thing if we can teach one thing to our student athletes, these 18 to 22 year olds, is teach them how to be resilient, because we've lost it. I mean, it's becoming a lost character. And I think being a coach and going through even a normal year, the ability to build resiliency and ownership and intrinsic motivation empowerment within student athletes. If they sprain their ankle, or if they get a bad grade, or if there's something's going on with their family, that's what I love most about coaching. And certainly COVID, you know, has provided a lot of fertile ground for that.
Yeah. It's interesting. There's kind of two aspects that come up. One of which is, you kind of touched on the loneliness of being the person at the top. And obviously that ties in with, hey, when you're out on the recruiting, you can go and hang around with some other people who know what it's like being, you know, the top of the pyramid. And it was a little bit in that vein that I started coaching conversations back in March or whenever it was, because I knew nobody's going to be in the gyms together. Nobody's going to be out recruiting together. So just that normal, hey, just talk shop about whatever happens to be going on was something that everybody was going to miss. I mean, I wasn't even actively coaching aside from working with some 13 and under kids, and I knew I was going to miss it. I couldn't even imagine what it would have been like for the people who normally see 35 other coaches in a weekend in a convention center.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I think it also allows us to really reflect on our own identity. Like, how much of our identity is built into our position as quote unquote coach. Yeah. You know, for me, you know, working at Ohio State, I mean, it was an all consuming, it was just different than it was at Ohio University. I don't know why. And we were top 15, top 10 team at Ohio University, but it was just different. And I think that was driven by me, right? I mean, I'm surrounded by people who've won national championships to my left. You know, and you're at Ohio State, regardless, you're supposed to, you know, there's a pressure you feel there. And I wanted that. That's why I took the job. Mm-hmm. You know, I think COVID also allows us to take a step back and go like, okay, well, what if I don't have my job? What if, you know, what if coaching doesn't resume? It allows us to actually, and I think that's really healthy, right? To be able to think about, okay, maybe I have one too many eggs in this basket and I need to be more balanced, right? And I don't know if you have kids, but as a fatherhood did that for me, right? I became a more balanced human being when I had kids, but also I struggled mightily between being a really great coach at the Big Ten level and a really great husband and a really great father. I never really got my arms around that as well as I wanted to. And to be honest with you, I probably spent more time being a good father, you know, and at the expense of some watching another 3 hours of video of Wisconsin. Right. I mean,
right.
And that's not a bad thing. I don't look at it as a bad thing, but coaching, as you know, there's always something to do, you know, mm-hmm. There's always one more phone call to make or one email to write or one more video to watch. So I think, you know, if we're smart as a profession and we want to be better, allowing COVID to allow us to be curious about ourselves and think about, okay, what, you know, where am I off? Where am I off balance a little bit? Or what do I want to build on? What do I want to let go of? And so for me, one of the foundational things I was working on was coaching from a place of love and not fear. So even conversations with my players that I knew they weren't going to love, whether it was playing time or mm-hmm. you're challenging them with in terms of how they're handling academics or whatever, I've been able to get step back and go, okay, is this coming from the right place? Am I coming from a place of love? Yes. Okay. Then you got to have it, right. You know, because I think a lot of times, well, if I have that conversation, what might happen? What, you know, if that person may take it the wrong way, or if they may not appreciate my honesty, or they wanted to start and you're trying to, you know, all these sort of things. I think a lot of us, I can speak for myself, you know, a lot of times coach from that place of, okay, I'm not going to have that hard conversation because I'm afraid of what might come from it.
Right, and so fear of confrontation. Yeah, exactly.
And I just think that these are the things that I think when I talk about grace and I talk about letting go is you need to find people in your life that you can talk about this stuff. And it can't mm-hmm. be My wife is great, but I don't want to talk to her about this all the time. You can't talk about it with your, necessarily with your assistant coaches. I was fortunate enough. Susan Halverson was my, you know, played for me. She was one of my assistants. She was my associate. So her and I felt comfortable talking to her about this because she wanted to be head coach and, right. And she was great and I trusted her and all that. So, but a lot of us don't have those people. And I think any coach, and I think particularly males in some ways, I think males really shy away from, can they have conversations with other male coaches that are cutting through the BS and are real right. and vulnerable and exposing your fears and all this sort of stuff. And I was very lucky to have two or three guys that were on my age that I could do that with. And I think females as well, but I think they just naturally are less shut off than guys, I think. So I think these are all things that COVID allows us to maybe reflect on and at the, you don't have a lot of other stuff we can do right now. So working on ourselves and working on our relationships and really fine tuning and sharpening the axe of where am I weak? Where are my blind spots? You know, I do need someone who I can bounce these things off of because we know things are going to get back to normal and coaching is not easy sometimes. So,
right. Yeah. One of the
COVID parade allows us to do that.
You kind of brought up the idea of rethinking, you know, being forced to rethink and, you know, do too many eggs in one basket. As you said, I definitely had those thoughts, you know, in these last few months, like what happens if this whole thing goes away? What imagine the worst case scenario that intercollegiate sports disappears. Well, yeah. Except maybe basketball and football. Yeah. But even then, you know, even they would probably just show up in a different form. What would I do if I didn't have coaching? Where would I have to go to make a living to feel fulfilled and all of those things that come with being a coach? And it's unsettling. I mean, it definitely is. If you haven't given your chance, you're giving yourself a chance to think through those things over time anyway, just as a natural pattern of your self-evaluation of, okay, where am I at in my life and where am I at in my career? And do I want to continue on this or should I explore these other things? You know, all that sort of stuff. So,
yeah. I have no idea what you're talking about. You know, but it's good. I mean, we challenge our player. We want our players to grow and we sometimes I'm not so sure we, you know, practice what we preach and you don't necessarily want, like Kathy DeBoer said this, you know, how do you find grace without a pandemic? You know, how do we teach our young coaches to find grace without getting fired or getting sick or a pandemic creating this. Right. And, you know, I told her, I'm like, you know, I will say this, you know, when you only lose three times like we did at Ohio University over 5 years, grace is easier to find. You don't feel like you know, so winning, I think, sometimes really covers up a lot of stuff that I think are opportunities for growth, right? And but I also think that the other part I told her was, you know, I think we need to have these conversations. Like, and that's why I've chosen to sort of share parts of my story, you know, in a pretty public manner, you know, because one, it just, I think it's helpful for me. It's helpful for others. I've been asked to do it. And I don't think a lot of people do it. I mean, it's why I went to the Final Four after I got let go. I wanted to be there. I was presenting and I'm not going to go crawl under a hole because I got let go. I mean, I'm proud of what I've done and you know, but I certainly could, there's certainly always room for improvement as a coach. So, you know, I think, you know, the idea really is let's talk about these things. It's almost like you talk about, you're starting to see people talk about mental health and having conversations and even anxiety and depression, these things that we're talking about with our players, let's get in, you know, they're getting all the support. I'm not sure we do that for coaches. And I don't think it's out there and we just are kind of tough and we roll up our sleeves and get after it. You know, but there's not a safety net for a volleyball coach like there is for football and basketball. And so we deal with the same stresses, but we, you know, there's other areas that, you know, who's got our backs, you know, mm-hmm. and who can we turn to and talk to about these things? And the reality is I'm not sure we have those opportunities set up. And I think that's a challenge for us moving forward as a profession is, you know, one, I think individually as coaches, let's find those people and let's go and have those conversations. One, it could just be one or two people that you really trust that you can talk to.
Yeah.
And on a macro level though, you know, what, I mean, there's a lot of anxiety and depression and all these other feelings in the coaching profession.
Yeah. Just generally, never mind with COVID, just before normal COVID. Course of business. Yeah.
You know, that's not a good thing. You know, I mean, it's a stressful job. So let's, you know, but let's also take a step back. And one of it is individually, like, how do we show ourselves grace and take a step back and let go and not try to control everything and understand that we're going to, you know, if we come from a place of love and not fear, that's all we can do. And we have to find comfort in that and then lean on other people and even our student athletes. You don't have to be like, having them be your counselors to be honest, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, how empowering is it for, especially I think as a female coach to show and to have honest conversations with young females about struggles, right? I mean, I can't do it as a male coach coaching females. I feel I was pretty open and authentic with where I was from. My father died. I had some health stuff, you know, I had kids and we talked about these things because I want them to know who I am. And that was very, very important. Yeah. So I think, you know, female coaches who are willing to take on that role, I think, holy cow, what a powerful thing for a young woman to, and I don't think that makes us weak. I don't think that lessens our leadership by being authentic and being real and showing a little bit of vulnerability. Because ultimately, if you bottle that stuff up, I mean, my background's in social work. I've worked with gangs. I've worked with all sorts of people who are struggling. That's got to come out somewhere. And mm-hmm. that just because you're a coach doesn't mean that you're immune to that. So the challenge I think for us is let's use COVID as a litmus test for how we do better. You know, how do we lean on each other better? How do we provide for each other? Because I was very lucky. I have some very, very close friends that I was able to do that, but I'm not sure a lot of the younger coaches necessarily have that or even understand the importance of that yet.
Right. Yeah. Especially those who are really in ladder climbing mode, not there being that focused, but you reminded me of, do you remember the year Mike Seeley just had it? I think it was the year after he won a national championship or maybe 2 years afterwards where they just had a terrible season and it was a disaster. But he was on a panel at the AVCA that year where it's like, you know, how do we win? And of course, his team had won that year. So he's surrounded with all these coaches who had done really well that year, you know, to their normal level. And he's like having to talk about how difficult the season was and how he's trying to react to it. And that he was pretty vulnerable in that instance, which was good to see to the point that you're making. You know, like with the young female athletes being able to see it in their coach that, hey, I can be vulnerable and exposed like this and yet still be strong and in a position of authority and do my job the way it needs to be done.
Yeah. I didn't know him very well, but him and I actually talked right around that time because I mean, 3 years ago we were sixth in the country. I mean, like it happens, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't ever think the injuries that happened could happen. But coaching, there's no, I don't know. I feel like as soon as you think you have it dialed in, you're in trouble. I think there's a lot of examples like that, right? I mean, I'm just one of those examples where, man, we had it rolling in 17 and we were rolling and felt good. And I thought we could win a national championship in 18 and we lost 3 All-Americans and a top recruit in the country. And had a couple other injuries and holy crap, we were bad. Like, yeah. I mean, I really thought the best team I was ever going to have was 2018. It was one of my worst years I've ever had coaching. And it was just like, what the heck? It was nothing that we had any control over. Mm-hmm. but you respond, right? And you work on it. And so, yeah, I absolutely remember that with Sealy. And I think the more people like that can come and talk about that and be real with it, and not shy away from it, the better. Because we also, I think, I mean, I don't know how old you are, but there's a new group of coaches coming up that need to understand this and get ahead of it. So hopefully the next group is going to be a little bit better than we were, you know, in terms of this and getting on top of this. But I do think there's a great opportunity right now that COVID has allowed us. And whether you want to call it grace or whatever you want to call it, that's just the word that came to mind. You know, I think coaching is a great profession. I wanted that to come out of there. Like, here's why we coach. We give of ourselves. We're there with our student athletes when through thick and thin, whether it's, you know, I just had one of my former players' dads just passed away. And, you know, she's I coached her in 2003, you know, and we're still in really good friends and going through life together. You know, our kids play together, and that's why you coach, right? And the other part of that coin is, man, it's hard. you know, you lose every loss when, you know, if one of your players kind of lets you down, or if you feel the pressure within you, whether your administration or your boss leaves, or you have kids, you're trying to navigate. There's not another profession quite like what we do. And that's why we love it. Right. And so if we can just let down our guard a little bit and have these real conversations, I'm starting to see it happen more and more and more. And I don't see a downside to it.
Yeah. It was, you kind of talk about grace and not thinking of it in terms of a religious context. And, you know, something else that you mentioned in there was not having the idea of this all happened for a reason.
Right.
Which kind of fits in a similar sort of category. It happened, but it's not like this was a plan. There's some, you know, this is taking me on to better things. It's just, it happened and I'm dealing with it.
Yeah. I mean, I had one of my best friends died of the flu, and his wife had died from, you know, he'd actually died from a brain tumor, and his wife died from flu the year before. They're both in their 30s. And I'm like, no. And I get that we want to have an answer. We want to have a response. Mm-hmm. And, well, you know, things, no. And this is not, I'm not comparing that to my situation or coach, you know, but I think my point there was, you know, it happened. And, I didn't consider, like, I wouldn't say I felt peaceful, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I remember walking out the door. I remember, but I don't remember going like, well, things happen for a reason. It just was a letting go. It was a letting go of so many responsibilities that I felt that I felt like the Dutch boy trying to plug in the dams, mm-hmm. you know, and not just with my career, but with my family. And so for me, and I think this is how I'm wired with how I was brought up, was, you know, I was pretty independent, had to be independent growing up, was okay. There's going to be a time for mourning here. But it was really short. And it was time to move on and start, what are we going to do next? So we decided we were going to go to Spain for 5 months, and we're going to live in Spain and take our kids. And then that got coronaed, you know, it's like, well, so getting let go in December and then right on top of COVID, you know, some people are like, oh man, you got lucky that you're not having, I'm like, no. First of all, I don't believe in it's lucky or unlucky necessarily, but I actually would have, my players often would say, like, they would follow me. I'm the guy that would want to follow if there was a fire or something really bad happening. Mm-hmm. Like I was calmest in those moments, but I would be really, I would get worked up about stupid stuff. And it's true. It was true. And so I think, you know, I miss coaching with, you know, with all of the racial injustices and the riots and like that. I loved, because there's so many lessons there. There's so many opportunities to teach and to be there and to help your staff and players grow. So I miss that, honestly. So I think those of us who are still, you know, are still in the muck and working with this, you know, what a great, that's why I put down like, hey, this could be our legacy. Like, instead of thinking about unprecedented times, well, if they are, which they are to some extent, then we can act, mm-hmm. we can act in a unique way, just the same. And this could be our, you know, this can be your legacy as a coach. This can be your legacy as a program, how you respond. And I think some are going to do it, are going to do really, really well. And I think some aren't, you know, yeah. I think some coaches are not looking at this as in the right lens. So I think, but we'll know. I mean, we'll see what happens. But I do think the coaches and the programs were able to not just say, hey, we're going to get through this. I think that's part of it. But also, like, let's really get into what's going on here. Like, what is this exposed about me as a coach, as a staff, as a team? Let's talk about this and get it out. And I think, man, you come on the other side of that, there's an ability to build trust and to build vulnerability and build a whole nother layer of chemistry that I think allows you to go from being really good to exceptional.
Yeah. I find myself thinking about two things, two kind of shock to the system sort of things. One of them was actually a firing, and the other one was a different kind of rejection. And I'll start with that one first. I write all the time. I'm a writer. I've been a writer for years and years, published in a lot of different ways. For a long time, I would submit an article to a professional magazine or whatever, and it would get accepted. Maybe it would get lightly edited and posted or whatever, but it never got turned down. Then one day I submitted something for a blog at that time, and they shot it down. And I literally laughed. When I saw the rejection, I laughed, probably slightly hysterically. Just, it struck me as the funniest thing. It was kind of a like, all right, finally somebody pushed me back and said, no, this isn't good enough.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, yeah, you're right. This isn't good enough. I shouldn't have sent this. This is not the quality of submission that I should have done. And it wasn't as traumatic as being fired or anything like that, but it was like, okay, what do you think you're doing? Come on, you know, yeah. Learning the teaching moment, so to speak. In terms of the firing thing, you know, in a kind of very similar way, not similar in certain ways, different in other respects. I was coaching a professional team in Sweden, and they let me go at the beginning of February. So still a couple months left in the year. And it was, from a performance perspective, completely shocking. We were having probably the second best season that club had ever had. And the other coaches in the league are like, what are they thinking? What are they doing? What's going on? And the reason was probably entirely political within the club. Just, you know, the mother of one of the players, who was the wife of the president of the club, she didn't like me. She right. just flat out didn't like me. And kind of gave me some serious lip after our prior match. And so, you know, when they sat me down, you know, the president sat me down with one of the other board members, he gave me an excuse, but he was kind of like sheepish.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, that's not a really good excuse, is it? But, you know, so there's obviously that first impact of, you know, what the heck just happened, anger, frustration, embarrassment, all that stuff that goes flashing through your head, especially if you've never really been fired from anything before. Because right. you have no you know, map to figure out how to deal with this.
Right.
So there was kind of a couple of different reactions in my case. You know, there was obviously that initial emotional reaction. There was some lagged emotional reaction to it, just in terms of the frustration of how it all happened. Not totally irrational. Some of it might have been, you know, who knows.
Sure.
But, you know, there was also a sense of relief that I didn't kind of really recognize at the time. It was only through some conversations with people who knew me that I was able to realize something. I wasn't very happy there. I didn't know it so much at the time, But when my mother was somebody who said it, somebody else in coaching said it, I think a friend of mine who was not in coaching, but I've known for years, they kind of picked it up in like my correspondence and things like that. It's like, yeah, you didn't seem like you were having a lot of fun there. And I was like, hey, you know what? You might be right. I might have been kind of miserable, you know? And so it was this really weird educational moment of, I probably need to pay more attention to my state of mind and my state of being, because no doubt that was getting reflected somehow in my coaching.
Right.
And to what you were bringing up before, whatever you're going through as a coach, there's a good chance it's going to come out some way. You just need to know where to focus it so it doesn't, you know, impact people too negatively.
Right. Well, one of my my professors, who I grabbed some coffee with, it was after I had let go, but before COVID, and he helped me with my social work degree, and I worked with gangs with him and whatever. He said, look, you need to understand you're going to have some struggles after this. It's going to happen. It's natural. But he said, listen to it, lean in on it, be curious about it. Don't run away from it. Because now you know what it feels like to sort of lose, you know, and he didn't want to be over dramatic, but you lost everything that you thought was going to happen next week is no longer happening because, you know, when you get let go, you move, you're no longer a part of that community in a lot of ways. And so his advice was really listen to yourself, learn, because whatever you do next, and he knows me really, he goes, you're going to do some really cool things. Now you can actually speak to all people who have been let go, or he goes, you can speak to people who have been displaced from their country, because you'll at least, it's not the same, but you'll be able to connect with that feeling of, whoa, everything that was going on yesterday is no longer happening. Obviously happens when people get sick, when we lose people. You know, I think when you lose a job, when something pretty big happens in your life. And he said, you know, listen to yourself, don't run away from it. So I thought that was really great advice in the sense of, and that's a part of, you know, my core teaching is, okay, what can you learn from this? And so when that grace happened, it was, you know, within a few days, it was like, okay, let's start, where are the lessons here? Mm-hmm. Listening to myself, you know, and that's where you kind of get the, okay, this is okay. Like there's some good stuff that's going to come from this, and I'm going to learn, I'm going to grow, and I'm going to, you know, there's going to be some scars, but there's scar tissue and you move on. And that's a part of life. And I love writing as well. And so this is, there's stories, there's storylines here that you may were not aware of. And so for me, since that day, I really try to focus on, even on days that I'm really struggling with whatever it is, even with kids, is take a deep breath. Okay. What's going on here? And being that self-reflection is something that, you know, and it doesn't sound like you were doing much in Sweden. And I don't think a lot of us are, we're freaking busy and it's harder to self-reflect than it is to just kind of be an autopilot. So, I think that message from my professor was really profound and simple in the sense of don't lose the message here. There's a lesson here. And too many of us will keep busy or get frustrated or blame or pretend that you're not struggling or whatever. You're going to lose the message, man. So be, when it happens, not if, when it happens, be in the weeds, be in the muck, be in there and really do some self-reflection and communicate and write, because that's where growth happens. And so, you know, I've, not perfect, but it's certainly a lesson that I've tried to, I mean, I have it down in my, right in front of me here in my office, which is also my 3-year-old's bedroom, but, you know, which is really always being curious what is going on, whether it's, you know, something with my kids or my thing falling over for the 20th time. So yeah, I think there's, I'm sure you had to reflect a little bit on Sweden and even getting this new job, like, you know, maybe you're not freaking out so much because of Sweden, you know, you're used to these, you've learned more than you think.
This will potentially take us slightly off topic or maybe a lot. I don't know. It depends on where you want to go with it. After Sweden, I went and coached in Texas in Division II in the Lone Star Conference, which I'm guessing you have some familiarity with from your days. Yep. Strong conference, not Northern Sun, at least, you know, these days, but one of the top conferences. And the team that I came into, or, you know, it was a rebuilding job. They had had zero conference wins the year before. And so I was in there with a relatively new head coach and was kind of filling in as somebody that she could use as a sounding board and a more experienced coach on her staff and stuff like that. And one of the more interesting things that I thought about along the way was, okay, we're a losing team, but we're a losing team in a pretty good conference. And when you kind of, so on the day to day, you're like, man, you know, we just lost another one. And it takes a toll and it adds up to it. But if you step back and you look at it and go, okay, yeah, but we're better than the next 200 teams in Division II. We could wipe the floor with half of them. We just don't reflect that because we can't see it in our bubble. Now, at Ohio State in the Big Ten, obviously you've got a lot of good teams that are constantly, you're trying to reach and trying to reach. And so you talked about when, you know, before we kind of got the discussion going about being 15 and 15 and being number 26 in the RPI, but still only being 15 and 15. And so on a day-to-day basis, you're like, we didn't get enough wins. We're not quite good enough. Whereas there's 310 teams behind you in the rankings that on any given day wouldn't even be close to you in the gym. What's the psychology of that like?
Well, I think one of the more stressful things for me was scheduling because, you know, I was at Ohio University. We knew we were going to win quite a bit in the MAC, so we could schedule really hard in the preseason. So, and I love that. I mean, man, my next job, if I get back into coaching, is you know, I love the idea of like being where the Creightons are, the Marquettes and the Western Kentuckys, because they're really good teams and they can schedule, but they know they're going to win a decent amount in their conference. So they can take more risks with their scheduling in non-conference. It's the opposite. It was the opposite when I went to Ohio State. Cause I knew if we could stay above 500, we would almost, I mean, every year we were above 500, we made the tournament and right. Seven of them, we made the Sweet 16. So yeah. And I think also being around people surrounded by greatness within even our department, but I love that. Like there was nothing about that I didn't love. But you're right. You're right. You tend to just, you're in, if you don't take off the blinders, you lose perspective. If you don't take off the blinders, then it's really hard to let go. And so I think that ties in with the feelings that I was writing about were, you know, it's, man, I wish I wouldn't have let, you know, I wish I, what my advice would be, do some self-reflection, journal, write about like, where are you at right now? Cause if you don't get it down, then you don't know where your perspective is. Yeah. You know, if your lens is on this, you know, you can't see peripherally what's really going on. And I think a lot of that comes down to gratitude too. I mean, we preach gratitude we did all sorts of things. You know, last summer we went to Peru, we went to Brazil, and we did a lot of service work because I believe firmly in the power of gratitude, especially with young people. I mean, going to nursing homes and working with people who, you know, just are coming off of being paraplegics from accidents. You can't, once you see these and have these interactions, you're never the same. And so we built that into everything we did. But again, I'm not sure I did that nearly enough when it comes to what you're describing, which is when we won, it was like, thank God, you know, lost. It was like, oh my God, we have Penn State tomorrow. And then we have, you know, then we have the, anyway, blah, 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 blah. So, I was getting better at that. Frankly, I was getting very much better at that. And I think it was reflected in our recruiting and how we weren't so stressed out about recruiting. We had you know, this is our 19, 20, and 21 classes at Ohio State are all top five, top six in the country. And I think a lot of that came from just letting go, not letting go with in terms of how you, the messaging, and we lost a lot of kids, but we are moving in the right direction for sure. And so I think I'm just continuing to build on that and trying to help other coaches too. I think I've coached quite a few coaches in the last 6 months, very informally, you know, in terms of helping them guide them a little bit. And there's things, whether it's journaling or just catching, you know, taking a moment to really be show gratitude, mm-hmm. but also look around, just step away and look around at where you're at. And we're coaching a game. We have, you know, we're in the middle of COVID. I think right now it's even more important to take a step back and take stock of what we do have and not necessarily what we don't have and what we're not able to do. I think that's a really powerful exercise to do. So certainly, and it gets back to when I was at Ohio University, I mean, we won a lot. And when you win a lot, you know, you think you're maybe better than you are. I don't know, but you just don't worry about things. And everyone's more happy because if you're winning, winning solves a lot of problems.
Right.
And if you're in the grinder of a conference or you're in the grinder because you got some injuries, you know, whew, everything changes pretty quickly. And that's self-imposed. I mean, it really is self-imposed. And I think I wish I would have learned that a little bit quicker. And so I think, you know, to your point, that ability to just take a step back, breathe, look around is so powerful. Even if you do it for 5 minutes, you know, twice or three times a day, it's really powerful. It really is powerful.
Yeah. I had a pretty impactful experience at the 2013 AVCA. I was coaching over in England at the time. But going to that conference, I met up with one of the players I coached at Brown the decade before, you know.
Yeah.
It just so happened that she had landed herself in Europe and had played some professional ball over there. Her boyfriend was playing pro basketball over there, so she was just kind of following him around. So she played in a couple of different places. She also was in England right about the same time as I was. So we kind of spent some time talking about that. And over the course of what ended up being like a 3-hour dinner that closed the place down, we got back to talking about our Brown days. And hearing her perspective on what happened in that time frame. And she didn't have an easy time. She had back problems that kind of slowed her down. And there were some things that developed over those couple of seasons that didn't work in her favor. And there were some other stresses in the program for sure that, you know, even as an assistant coach at that point, I knew what was going on. But there's things that you don't know that are going on behind the scenes with the players, what they're talking about and they're experiencing, that just you hear it and you go, oh, whoa, that's a whole different view on things. And that was an eye-opener. Definitely, for sure.
Yeah. I think the things I'm working with now, it's been fun because I'm working with some executives. I'm working with, you know, some professional athletes. I'm working with some, you know, some 16, 17 year old kind of up and coming beach players. And it's all the same. We're all dealing with stuff, you know, and I'm not trying to make it sound real simple, but I mean, it is, it's coaches, you know, we don't have all the answers and we don't have it together, just like no one does. And, the pressures that we feel are real, and some of them are self-imposed and some of them are, you know, based off of fear of losing your job and supporting your family or, you know, just identity or whatever it might be. You know, so I think, and so are student athletes. You know, I think student athletes are going through a lot. My favorite moments were when that happened. I mean, when our players were struggling, I enjoyed being there. I think one of the struggles I think coaches are having is, you know, those opportunities are sort of being taken away from a little bit. Like if they're struggling with the academics, you don't deal with it. Someone else deals with it. So we're you know, so many other people in the programs, you know, are handling things because they don't want coaches to be involved with, you know, shoot, I'm recruiting a kid when she's 16 and she's going through a major surgery. I want to be involved with that. I want to be there. I want to be, you know, and I think a lot of places are nervous about that because of, you know, certain coaches have abused that privilege. And, you know, so right. I think the transformation, the magic happens almost always when things are, when there's a struggle. And that's what I wanted to write about in that article too, is that's the beauty of coaching. It's why I coached. And I think, you know, the pressure to win sometimes makes that difficult, but in the end, I'm going down to Florida. I'm going to spend some time with one of my players from Ohio University, and we've kept in touch over the years. I love that. We're going to go have dinner and catch up on life. And I love that. And, you know, I think I would hate to see, that becoming less and less of an opportunity because of, you know, administrations being nervous or worried about those conversations. I loved having coffee with our players. You know, we'd try to do it every couple of weeks. We'd go grab coffee. And, you know, I think that's where the good stuff happens. And I think that's where, that was the enjoyment for me. And, you know, winning was great. And I'm the most, one of the more competitive guys you'll ever meet, but still, in the end, you want to have impact, right? And I think every coach wants to have impact. So COVID is one of those chances. You know, it's an opportunity even for you. You can't get in the gym, which sucks. As you describe it, I would struggle with that too, especially with everyone having Zoom fatigue. Yes. you know, but there's ways, you know, and I think the best coaches get creative with how do you build trust and vulnerability. In the middle of a pandemic, you know, so those are things I've been helping kind of help coaches navigate and not just for their players and the culture within their program, but also for themselves. Right. Yeah. I mean, how do you use this time to grow and to be better? Instead of just sitting there going like, this sucks, you know, cause I think it's easy to go like, man, this sucks. Oh man. And like, well, okay. What would you do if your players said that all the time? I mean, you can't be riding the victim train. It's about how do you figure this out and model it in a way that, on the other side of it, everyone around you is going to be better for kind of having known you.
Thanks for listening. Check out the show notes on the website, coachingvb.com, for links and further information about this episode. You'll also be able to find the complete back catalog prior to coaching conversation. While you're there, you can sign up for my mailing list. Members find out in advance what conversations I'll be doing next and can submit questions if they like. If you'd like to support this podcast, go to patreon.com/coachingvb. Patrons get early access to every episode, as well as other special benefits along the way. I'm always interested in hearing what you think about coaching conversations and ideas you might have of topics and or guests for future episodes. You can send them to me at john@coachingvb.com, tweet them to @coachingvb, or hit me up on my Facebook page, Coaching Volleyball. All the best until next time.